Morning, everyone. Technology is great when it works. Well, this morning, if you look at your program, you will see that I am on for the exhortation. Before we changed the format around, it used to say speaker. I liked that better. It was a lot less pressure. And he said to get up and speak. Now I have to give the exhortation. So I had to look that up just to make sure it meant what I thought it meant. So I went to the dictionary.com, those masters of the obvious, and they said that the exhortation was the act of exhorting. Who knew that? So I went to Merriam-Webster and looked up exhortation. It says it's language intended to incite or encourage. So that was a little bit more along the lines of what I thought it meant. So this morning I'm going to incite a little bit, and then hopefully at the end I can encourage. So I always wanted our talks here to be more encouraging, because I think that's kind of really what we're talking about here. You want to be encouraged. You want to walk away feeling like you really communed with God and you have strength to face the world that's out there. So we'll try and encourage this morning, but we'll get to the inciting part first. For some reason in my mind, it makes me think of an old Rod Stewart sign where he said he got arrested for inciting a peaceful riot. So I start off by telling you that I'm angry with Wade Stanley because he stole my topic last week. Well, maybe I stole his topic. I'm not sure. But we were both thinking along the same lines. So if you were here last Sunday afternoon and heard his talk, mine's going to sound a whole lot like it because they run along the same lines. So Wade's topic was, do you remember? Yeah, don't scare the kids, or quit scaring the kids, something like that. Mine's something similar, and it's called Quit Depressing Our Kids. Okay? So, and like his talk, mine was prompted by a question from one of our young people. So I teach the junior high and the high school class, and I'm always asking them, what do you want to see done? What do you want the church to be, to do? What are some suggestions on how we can make it better for young people? And so we share a lot of ideas, and so they share with me sometimes. Well, in the course of one service one day, a young person came up to me and a little bit exasperated and said, why would anyone ever want to come to this church? And I was a little bit stunned by that. And I said, what do you mean? Can you clarify that? Give me a little context around here, kind of a wide open question. They said, why would anybody ever want to come to this church? All you ever hear in the talks and in the classes is how bad things are. They're worse than they've ever been before, and they're only going to get worse. Our country's falling apart, the economy's going to crash, these young people are all bad, no manners, no morals, no nothing. It's just despair and misery and depression, and there's a net flying around. What, you know, abandon hope, all ye who walk through the doors. That's the message that our young people seem to be hearing, at least this young person, and I think that's true to a large extent. There are two sides to it. I think that it's true because I've been guilty of this myself. Those words have come out of my mouth as well. Man, it's bad, and it's going to get worse. I think we need to stop saying that. Let's look at it from both perspectives here. The young people, they don't have a lot of perspective on what it was before. So when you say, it's worse than it was before, they're like, well, before was childhood. I thought that was pretty good. So now they're in high school, they're going to college, or they're coming out and getting a career. They've got their whole future ahead of them. They're doing what we told them to do. Go out, learn a skill, get a job, build your own life. That's what you're supposed to do. And so that's what they're doing. They're looking forward to that. There's hope there. They want to have hope. They don't want to be told that, oh, you can hang it up because it's not going to work. It's all bad. Everything's going to be bad. So you have to understand their point of view. They have hopes, they have futures, they're just starting their adult life. They have dreams and they want to have what we have. They want to have what their parents have, right? They want to go out, they want to get a career, they want to get a spouse, build a family, you know, get a house, huge mortgage, two car payments, crushing credit card debt, you know, in hock up to their ears for decades to come. It's the American dream. That's what they're looking forward to. They don't want to be told, oh, it's terrible, you're not going to get any of that. It's all just going to crash and there'll be nothing. So you can see that their point of view. It doesn't want to be bleak. And you don't need to really tell them how bad things are in the world. I mean, they're in high school, they're in college, Those aren't the models of Christian behavior out there. I was telling you a story about Nathan. It was kind of funny if it wasn't alarming. Well, in the spring, he'd come home, and he's complaining about how hot it was in their dorm. He was still in the dorms, and they don't have air conditioning in the dorms. So he's complaining it was starting to warm up and get hot in there. I said, okay, well, open your windows and open your door and get some airflow going through your room. And he said, no, we can't do that. Kid in the room next door, he opens his windows, and if our windows are open, then all the pot smoke from his room comes into our room. So we can't keep the windows open. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. Yeah, you should probably keep them closed then, I would think. So you know what's going on. If you look back, I wasn't in college at the time. I was in the Navy, but I visited my friends in college. It was pretty much the same. It's no worse now than it was back then. So, but anyway, our young people know what it's like. So we don't have to continue to remind them about how bad it is, or even remind ourselves. And of course, you know how the old people are. And I consider myself, well, I'm not quite there yet. I'm almost to the old people stage. I got a few more months, and then I'll officially classify myself as the old people. In fact, I went to the fair this year on Wednesday. It was Senior Citizen Day, and that smart aleck little 20-year-old just gave me the discount. He didn't even ask. I was like, cool, I got $8 to get in. I went, wait a minute. That's why I was. It was a Senior Citizen discount. So then I was mad. Anyway, us old people, we love to talk about how good the good old days were. Don't we? I mean, oh, the good old days. It was always better back then. Now it's terrible, but it was good back then. I mean, it was all sunshine and rainbows, you know, blue skies and unicorns rocking the fields. It was wonderful back then, but now it's terrible. It's the way we're wired. We have a tendency to minimize or to forget all the bad things that happened. We focus on the good things, and that's what we remember. I remember I'd been out of the Navy about 10 years, and I was thinking, you know, Navy wasn't that bad. I should go back in the Navy. I visited all these places. You know, it's steady income. I had a place to live all the time. It was pretty good. I should go back in. And I thought, what am I saying? I didn't like the Navy at all. All of the abuse that masqueraded as discipline and everything like that, and having to go to those inspections and all that stuff. Why would I ever want to go through that again? I did it once. It was great. It was the best thing I ever did. It was what I needed. It was the best decision I ever made. But I don't want to go do it again. So forget about all the bad things, and we focus on all the good things. And so it's always the good old days. So were the 60s the good old days for some of you who were there? Do you remember the rampant drug use and sexual explosion that happened at that time? Is that the good old days? And maybe if you were in college, you don't remember the good old days. So, all right, so... And you may have seen a few unicorns, too. I don't know. Anyway, all right, here we go. In my notes here, I have cue the rant, okay? Here's the rant. This is the inciting portion of it. So, are things really worse now? It all depends on what you're comparing it to. Are you comparing it to the times of Noah, Sodom and Gomorrah, the Roman Empire, or any one of a dozen other pagan empires out there, and their lifestyles and what happened then? Is it worse now for us? No. Okay, so... What about just history then? A short history of America. Well, yeah, it's America. Do you remember the Wild West? I mean, I know it's been romanticized and probably made a lot worse than it was, but there was a lot of violence. Those mining towns, the cowboy towns, I mean, they brought in, set up houses of prostitution to service those men. It was not good, all right? It was not good back then. So is it worse now? Well, it depends on your perspective. I was in the Navy again in the mid-70s, and that was another Navy story for you. So I reported on board my ship on August 5th, 1975. I always remember. 3 days later, we went on a three-week deployment to the Caribbean to do some qualifying before our med cruise. And I'd been on their ship 3 days. I was on the mess decks, which means I was working on the kitchen duty. And we pulled out of harbor that evening, and we weren't very far out. I mean, you could still see Charleston. We were beyond the three-mile territorial limit, because we were going to have to dump the garbage over the side of the ship. But back on the back of the ship, I've told some of you this story before, and there had to be between 15 and 30 people sitting back there smoking pot on the back of the ship. I mean, blatantly standing around smoking pot on the back of the ship. And I was stunned. I'm like, oh, here, this is your military defending you against the commie invaders if they're not too high to do that. So it was not a good time. I mean, the military now is... much better than the military back then. They don't, I mean, it's a lot smaller. It was not good back then. I thought, wow, this is crazy. So those weren't the good old days when you're talking about the military. It was not good during that time. So things run in cycles, right? Wade had mentioned that, and I mentioned that in one of my earlier talks. Things run in cycles. They go up and they go down. They get worse. They get better. Maybe there's a slow downward trend, but it's in cycles. It all depends on your point of view. Does it seem like the world's gone crazy? Yeah, it does kind of seem like the world's gone crazy, but look back in our cycles. The second decade of this century, when Europe exploded into war and people were killing each other by the millions, did people think the world had gone crazy and the end was coming? Probably. 20 years later, the same thing. Europe is taken over by the Nazis. The Japanese have all the Pacific. They're getting ready to invade the United States. Did people think the end of the world was coming? If the world had gone crazy? Absolutely. It was probably worse than now, but maybe the world's gone crazy now too. So it doesn't matter really. It doesn't really matter. Sin is sin. It doesn't matter what form evil takes, whether it's nationalism or false religion or no religion. Moral decay, evil is evil, sin is sin. We have to fight against it, but we don't have to obsess about it. God wants us to focus on exhortation on the good things, how to fight the bad things, but how to exhort, encourage one another. So, a few points here. Wait a minute. I'm going to point my notes here. End rant. Okay, that's the end of the rant. Now, so I get it, number one. I get the irony here. We don't want to have all these negative talks and everything, and this is pretty negative talk so far, so I get the irony, but I want to turn that around here in just a moment. So, the next thing is, we need to change it, because make no mistake, it's just one small step in the mind of a young person or anybody else from the question, why would anybody want to come to this church, to the question, why do I want to come to this church? It is one small step away. And we got to keep people from making that step. Keep them from taking that step. Every worship service, we have to answer that question. Answer the question on why we come to this church and why other people should come to this church. We need to answer that question, to show them. Stop preaching these messages of negativity and the end of the world is coming. Despair. Start preaching what? The gospel of Christ. A message of love and compassion, forgiveness and salvation. A message of hope and joy. That's what it is. That's what he brought it to us for. And that's what we have to show, that this is Christ's church. And that's why we come here, because it's Christ's church. And that's why others should want to come here too. And it all starts with us. It starts with me, right? It starts with me. I have to want to come here, number one, not because I feel obligated or because God commanded me to, or because if I don't, you're going, oh, Marty never comes to church, peer pressure, or whatever it is, tradition, habit, Wednesday, got to go to church, we go every Wednesday. I got to come here because I want to be here. I want to be here, and I want to worship God. If I'm frequently talking about bad things and how things are going to get worse and negativity, it's not a problem with the world so much as it's a problem with me. It's a heart problem. I call it a heart problem. It's a perspective issue. Perspective issue. It's a heart issue. Many years ago, when Nathan was little, I gave a series of talks called Lessons from the Boy. I love those talks. I talked a lot about joy and stuff. And Pat Thompson came up and she gave me a talk. And she said, I want you to give this talk, because it was a talk of joy and of happiness. I want you to give this talk. And it was titled, A Merry Heart. She sends out these emails every once in a while, and she loves Proverbs 17:22. A merry heart does good like medicine. It's in all of her emails. It's her focus. You know how happy of a person she is. We should all be like that. So she said, I want you to give this talk. And I looked at it and said, okay, yeah, sure, I'll give that talk. But, you know, it wasn't my language, and I need to modify it a little bit. And I stuck it in my Bible. And then I would bring it out and look at it. And I'm just not quite ready. And then things changed. The date on the talk was February of 2001. So some things happened. World issues happened. Didn't feel quite so joyful anymore. Work got all kind of crazy. And every once in a while, I'd pull it out and look at it and go, yeah, not yet. And I would stick it back in there. Well, it's still in my Bible. And I still haven't given that talk. And I'm not going to give it today, because she'll kill me. She's not here. So, but the point is very simple. A merry heart. You have to be merry. You have to have joy in your heart, or else, yeah, the world looks like it's crazy and there's nothing else to it. So true joy doesn't come from things of the world or even personal circumstances. We all know that. It comes from the scripture. It comes from God. It comes from something. comes from the scriptures. I lost it here. Anyway, so the word joy and joyful, rejoice, occurs between 350 and 400 times in the scripture. How important is that? The only thing that occurs that many times is love and salvation, or being saved. Those are the only concepts. Those three concepts are themes throughout the Bible more prevalent than anything else. So obviously, it's important to God that we have joy in our heart. Galatians 5:22 tells us where it comes from, that joy is a fruit of the Spirit. It's the fruit of a correct and intimate relationship with God, produced by obedience and service to Him by our love and worship of Him. I was reading something from an evangelist. It wasn't one of our evangelists. And he wrote Philippians 4:4, rejoice in the Lord always. And if we didn't do that, then it was tantamount to sinning. We had to rejoice always. You think, well, how can I rejoice always? Sometimes, I mean, terrible things happen. How can I rejoice in that? But it doesn't mean there's not a time or a place for mourning. But it doesn't need to steal that joy that's out of your heart, that's in your heart. 2 Corinthians, Paul's talking about their service to God and the work that they're doing amid all the difficult and the evil times. You think our times are evil? Those were much worse. And I love this passage from 2 Corinthians 6:3 through 12. I would like to read it to you. It says, we do not put an obstacle in anyone's way, lest fault may be found with our ministry. Instead, in every way we demonstrate that we are God's servants by tremendous endurance in the midst of difficulties, hardships, and calamities, in beatings, imprisonments, and riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger, with purity, knowledge, patience, and kindness, with the Holy Spirit, genuine love, truthful speech, and divine power, through the weapons of righteousness in the right and left hands, through honor and dishonor, through ill repute and good repute, perceived as deceivers and yet true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and yet, as you see, very much alive, as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful and yet always rejoicing, as poor and yet enriching many, as having nothing and yet possessing everything. I think that's a great passage. In there he talks about being sorrowful because bad things happen, but yet rejoicing anyway because God is with us. He's on our side. Our service may not be as severe as Paul's during that time, but our approach should be the same. Same spirit, joy, dedication, and service. I mean, there are many, many psalms of joy out there you can look to for inspiration. We've made many of them into songs that we sing for inspiration. I found a quote from somebody that I don't have written down here that says, in a full heart, there is room for everything. In an empty heart, there is room for nothing. We need to fill our hearts with joy, be merry, and then let that exhibit out and encourage other people. We need to leave the baggage of the world in the world. All the care, all the worry, all the hopelessness. Don't bring it in here, because this is no place for it. So does that mean we can never reference anything bad? Of course not. Bad things happen. We need to talk about them. We need to know how to do it. The scriptures talk about bad things all the time. How you deal with it. But how did you deal with it? Always rejoicing with joy in your heart and not obsessing or fixating on it. So we just finished our annual Labor Day meeting. It was great. It was hard work. A lot of hard work, and it cost a lot of money too. But were you encouraged by it is the question. Were you encouraged? I was encouraged. If you saw me, you might not have thought I looked encouraged, but I looked tired. But I was encouraged. It was great. We had some serious and sobering topics during that talk, during that meeting. But we were still encouraged. We walked away with joy and encouragement. So we need to do more of that. I really think that we need to do more of those. Maybe not to that magnitude. We need to gather the church together, not just this church here, but other congregations. Gather them together. Be encouraged. Share that joy more often. It will cost us more money, but we need to invest in the sowing of His Word. Don't hoard our resources because we're worried about what's going to happen in the future. We need to trust in God. In several places in the scriptures, we are told of people who are afraid. From right in the very beginning, Adam, I hid because I was afraid. To the parable of the talents where the man buries his talent in the ground because he's afraid of what could happen to it. He could lose it or it could get stolen. He wants to return it. So he was afraid, so he buried it. To the very end in Revelation, John falls in fear at the feet of Jesus. And what does he say to him? Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. We need to not be afraid for our future. It may look bleak sometimes, but it's not. It's great. I mean, what's the worst that can happen to us? We can die and go to heaven. That's the worst. So we need to not be afraid of the future. Invest in our service to God with joy and hope. And that's why we come to this church. That's why everybody should come to this church. So as I close my talk, I have a quote here from Ayn Rand. She's a writer, wrote some Anthem, Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged. She wrote, "Man has the power to choose, but no power to escape the necessity of choice." We have to choose. We can choose hope and joy or fear and despair. Which will you choose? But you have to choose. There's a lot of evil in the world. There's also a lot of good out in the world. God made a great world out there, and there's a lot of great people out there. A lot of evil, but there's a lot of goodness and greatness out there too. We can find it. Let's look at that. Let's focus on that. If we look for them, we can still find those blue skies and sunshine and rainbows. And if you look hard enough, you might even find a unicorn or two. So that's my talk. We'll offer the good news of Jesus Christ, offer the gospel invitation as we stand and sing.